When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. We're back for the second half of our draft strategy preview. And joining me is my Friday morning GM partner, Vas Larikos. Vas, how you doing?
Very good, Ken. Very good. Having fun working through all these different scenarios. Really feels like the draft has is upon us now this week.
It is the coolest time of year. And if you're Friday morning GM fans, and by the way, we want to really give you guys a shout out for whatever reason, and all the reasons are good. This show gets the most love during the off season of anything. Draft content obviously is always at the top. In fact, draft content listens are the highest of all the shows for the entire year, and probably some of that is a case of people. You know, the show has legs, so you can still listen to this show 2 months from now. But it's interesting. And anybody now coming back to it, if you're listening in August or September, you're getting a chance to find out what we got wrong at this time, you know, the 2 days before the draft when we're recording this. But also you have a chance to listen to this before the draft and hopefully get into some of the nooks and crannies we're going to get into in this second episode. So Vas, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Glad to have you back.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about the possibilities of trades here for the Ravens, because I know it can be very frustrating for fans to have their team trade out of the first round. Let's talk about, you know, some problems, for instance, that may exist with trading this year, or the likelihood you think that they might trade out.
Well, I think Eric DeCosta is always looking to play the board to his advantage as much as he possibly can. So I always think there's a high chance of a trade this year in particular. I think it may not be as advantageous in previous years for a couple of reasons. Number one, the positions they need, particularly left tackle, are scarcer positions. So you move back, you risk a chance of not having that right player there. Another consideration that I haven't heard mentioned very much, you hear a lot of, well, the Ravens have to be conservative with the salary cap because they're paying Lamar Jackson and just paid Roquan and paid Justin Madubuike, and they don't have a whole lot of cap dollars, which means that in free agency, they cannot go out and grab a Marcus Williams difference maker, which to me means that you need to try to get those difference makers in the draft. And naturally, the further you move back in the draft, the less likelihood you have of hitting on that big time difference maker.
Yeah, and that is one of the things about value selections is they often tend to be at the less valuable positions. And I think we saw that with the Linderbaum, Marquise Brown, turning him into Linderbaum. Now, great trade for value to get rid of Marquise Brown at that point. It was absolutely the right trade for value. And to pick up Linderbaum has turned out to be, it now appears, a very good pick. It could have been, you know, they had other ways they could have arranged their center/cornerback, but if they had done one that I advocated at the time, it could have been potentially disastrous because the guy I wanted was Kaiir Elam, and then to take Zach Tom later in the draft. And Zach Tom's ended up being a good player, but I think they got
very good.
Yeah, they end up getting a better value probably with Linderbaum. We'll see. That still has to play out, but Linderbaum's been certainly a very fine player.
Well, the other two occasions, Orlando Brown turned into Odafe away, so that's premium position for premium position. The other one was Hayden Hurst, which turned into J.K. Dobbins, which wasn't necessarily didn't end up being a great value for the Ravens there. That's with BPA, oftentimes the best player available is at a position that the other teams don't want. That's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah. That can certainly be the case, and you have to hope that that the right positions and the right skill sets drop to you to take advantage of that. I'm going to point out another problem here is that I think the Ravens limited total draft capital really constrains how they address something so central as left tackle with the barriers to entry it has. The Ravens have a unique opportunity this year to pick a left tackle with a one-year ramp-up period. Next year, if they let that the clock expire on this draft and they haven't got their left tackle still, it's a much more pressing and difficult need to fill next year. So they've got to figure out, basically, in terms of trading back specifically, how they avoid that situation coming up. I think this actually, because of it, is probably a rare year where the Ravens could trade up a few spots, particularly if the left tackles get scarce and they want to get the last one, and they have to move up to 20, 26, 27, 28 to do it, which I think is a reasonable place that might end up happening. Then I think it's possible that they could move up a couple of spots, but you always have a high percentage year of your cap total put into that first pick. It's another way to think of it is just how little total value the Ravens have after the first round. And it's only about 554 JJ points they have in all the picks after round one, which is why everything they have put together might only get them up to about pick 17 or so. That really is a sobering thought when you get down to it.
Sure. Absolutely true. I think that sort of takes that moving up for Fatanu or Fashanu idea from Gordon potentially off the table. It is sort of an ideal situation where you have Ronnie on a one-year deal where you can even offensive tackles drafted in the top 10 sometimes, a lot of times, take a year to develop. And you could cross-train and maybe – they could play guard depending on the height and, some of the really lanky guys, maybe not. But then again, Jonathan Ogden played guard for a year, so maybe they could. I really don't like packaging picks to move up necessarily. I don't like using top 100 picks to move up. If you can use some day three picks to move up, maybe at a later date, a later round, to me, maybe the third round would be a good spot to move up because the last few drafts – there seems to be sort of a drop off between the top of the third and then the bottom half of the third is developmental players. The top of the third is, contributors, day one contributors, week one contributors. That's what I would like to do. But, you're trying to get as many playmakers as you can. And using two picks for one player is just a losing proposition most of the time.
So we both happen to like the same guy in the second round for wide receivers, and that's Xavier Leggett of South Carolina. Okay. And we talked about that in the first one. I'm trying to find there's the trade value chart I'm looking for. So if let's say the Ravens don't trade up in the first round, how would you feel about moving up in the second round where the Ravens have a pick worth about 284 JJ points? I know other teams use other things in the JJ scale, but the team moving down will typically demand the premium of quote-unquote full JJ to move sure. up. Let's say the Ravens had to move up to number 55 to get Leggett instead of 62. Total cost involved there is 66 points, which is to right about number 113. Okay, so if they sure. gave up 113 to move up that far in round two, would you be okay, or is that too much of a premium?
No, I'd be okay with that. I think I'd be okay with that. If you're talking about the early fourth that they got from Moses. So basically... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'd be okay with that one. But I'd like to hang on to 93. I'd like to at least make a pick. Because you're really hoping you can fill all three of those needs with those first three picks. So that's the ideal situation.
Okay. All right. A secondary problem I see with this is a problem with it really with trading back as opposed to trading up is that if you trade back, you really can't jeopardize your chance to get the left tackle position filled. Now they're going to have places probably where they are forced with a choice to reach for a player who they really think should be a little bit lower, but that other teams may already be feeling the run occurring. On left tackle specifically, that it may be gone at 30. And so we talked a little bit about Kingsley Suamataia as being a guy that perhaps the Ravens might reach for. Hard to really get an exact peg on his value like any of these players. But him in particular, he's more a traits guy. He's definitely a one-year ramp-up guy in the NFL. And I would ask the question is, do you see the problem in taking a chance on moving back, say, eight spots if somebody offers a pretty good package of JJ points for that?
If he's your last guy, I think that's pretty risky. Wide range of opinion on Kingsley. You have Nate Tice, father, longtime offensive line coach, has Kingsley in his top 20 overall. You have Daniel Jeremiah, former Ravens scout, has him outside of his top 100. So it would be pretty risky. Could you maybe circle back with a Patrick Paul or a Kieran Amangaji at 62? Hopefully, maybe, but these positions, especially offensive line, even if you're well stocked, I mean, we've seen the Eagles take a first round tackle with no chance of playing time and totally redshirt him in the first round. I don't see many teams just passing on those players, even if they have five capable starters on the offensive line.
You know, it's a good place to praise the Raiders for one of their picks, because one of the guys they picked who was a complete tools guy, you know, nobody thought he was ready, Colton Miller. And mm-hmm. he ended up being a pretty darn good left tackle. And it certainly didn't look so that first year, but he was a developmental guy. And they took him pretty high to be a developmental guy. He was 16, 17, 18, they picked him. But it's still, you have to look at that and say, okay, of all the weird Raiders picks in history, that one actually worked out. All right. So let's talk about maybe some scenarios where you could see the Ravens trade back. What are kind of the conditions you would need to see that would be optimal for a trade back?
Well, to me, I think you'd like to see enough players with a first round grade, which you still have eight players on your board with a first round grade and you're moving back eight spots, or I guess maybe seven, and you're hoping somebody else jumps in there, but you know, you want to be better safe than sorry.
So I know that it was one GM, and I can't remember who it was, who said they always wanted to have a 2-to-1 relationship between the number of spots they had to go and a particular player's value that they coveted their chance. I don't think that really could apply very well to the first round, because there's much more of a consensus of where people are value-wise at mm-hmm. that point. But if you're in the fourth round, say, and you have three guys you like and are somewhat agnostic to position, then I think it's okay to move back six spots. I think you probably get one of those three guys. If you don't, then you know your next drop down is probably not that severe. So you just deal with that. In this thing, I just think the potential for loss by moving back in terms of the left tackle barriers, it's just enormous in round one. I think, you know, if there is a run on left tackles and you see that, yeah, maybe it's Sua Mataia, or not in the first round, you'd hope it wouldn't be Patrick Paul. I certainly would hope it wouldn't be Patrick Paul. I did see on Twitter, Patrick Paul is saying he's hearing he's now going in the first round.
He thinks he's going in the first round. Roger Rosengarten apparently got a first round with this mock that had 12 OTs in it. I don't know. It's what is that Leonard Skinner song? Don't ask me any secrets. I won't tell you any lies.
There you go. That's the one.
I think there's other component to it is DaCosta has a really good feel on what the other teams are trying to do. And I think that's something where he really excels. And obviously he's not going to sit there and talk about it, but I would have, you know, he games this out. He must go through scenario after scenario. We think the Chiefs are going to take this player and the Bills are going to take this player or this position. And I think that might be one of the places where he really games the system, because I would have to imagine he has one of the highest accuracies on mock drafts that he does in-house, you know, just to sort of play your odds there.
Probably a very good bet. I would think they have good models for that too. The wild card in all that is the trades that can occur, because you can always get teams. But that's probably something they fit in their models, is they're trying to see, you know, what's the chance that this team even will trade? Did this team? What's their history of trading their first round draft pick? Do they trade back a fair amount? The fifth year option is a consideration in trading back, I think, and in particular, since you mentioned this on the first show, since they're drafting a high value position, they're probably less likely to do it because they really want that fifth year option. If it's a, if, and that would apply to any of the three, I think, reasonable positions they could draft, whether it's wide receiver, cornerback, or left tackle. They're going to be looking to get a fifth-year option out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I we made that point in the first show. It just doesn't – it's a more – the fifth-year option is more appealing for those really high-paid positions than others. So, and DeCosta said it'll take a premium to get him to move out of the first round, and I agree with that. And sometimes his team, the players don't even play out that, but it adds to their trade value. Marquise Brown, for example, they picked up his fifth-year option. If he was drafted in the second round, maybe you don't get quite the return.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. It's always better to have two rather than one at the end of that contract. Even though, to be honest, I look at it as you get four cheap years and you get the fifth year at like a 20 or 30% discount over what you would pay. So it's you get 4.3 cheap years from a first round player if you get a pretty good pick. Let's see. One of the things about you know, what they could potentially do if they do move back is you really mentioned the premium in terms of harvesting additional value there. I hope the Ravens would get that for trading out of 30 in this draft based on what's out there. Now, if the board is wiped out at that point, maybe I feel a little bit differently about it. Maybe I feel like, okay, it's a crap situation, but at least they're going to harvest some JJ value for somebody else who wants the number 30 wide receiver, say.
And maybe you can get a pick for next year, you know, and then maybe you could be moved back and you take a Leggett potentially. If that's instead of trading up for him, you move back. If the board's wiped out, the board's wiped out. You know, I don't like to reach. Some, you need a dance partner, of course, but, you know, I really don't like to reach. So the one thing I noticed this year with DeCosta and his press conferences and media appearances that he made note of that I hadn't in the past is he always mentioned wanting to accumulate more picks, but this year he made special mention of wanting more picks in a certain range. And maybe that's a product of not being able to get a cornerback early enough last year, potentially.
Yeah. And the other thing he said is the Bisciotti reign of terror and how he wants to maybe trade a late round pick to move up in the thing. And that's something the Browns did last year with the Ravens. Browns could be hearing about it for years in terms of Andrew Vorhees, but I think it really is a question for the Ravens. While I'd be happy, you know, getting real value to give up a pick in this draft, I really wouldn't want it to be a top round pick. And I'd really go as far as nothing in the top five picks through the end of the fourth round. They just need too much in this draft. And also they have too much next year. So even though it'd be kind of really appealing to turn 130 into a third round pick next year, I just don't see I don't see them giving up on it with all the needs they have this year and the fact they have so many picks already next year. They got a lot of the small change covered for next year too. They'll have some opportunity to move up by having that currency of low round picks. In particular, they're going to have what, 4 sixth round picks next year, as it looks currently from compensatory purposes.
Yeah, 1/4 and 3/6.
Yeah.
Lot, you know, the more capital you have, the better overall. But how do you deploy that the most effectively? If you can combine the picks, we've been saying it for a long time. If you can trade four donkeys for a horse, do it. But it doesn't ever seem to really work out that way.
All right, that's a good one. I hadn't heard that one before. Let's talk about trading up. What are some of the ways the Ravens could trade up in this draft that might make sense? And we got one real special one that was sent to me by email, and I want to get to that one last. But you know, one, they can certainly trade picks for picks, and let's start with picks for picks. What's the highest you could see them going on a picks for picks basis?
I think probably what you said, giving up that first fourth will take you to what did you say, 27 or 26?
Let me see. The first fourth is worth about 68. Let me take the moment here and just put in Baltimore, because some reason it always like starts off on Houston's draft capital, maybe because they have the most. Yeah, so they get 68 additional points. That'll get you up to about really only about to 27 if you trade that first fourth. If you trade the second fourth, it'll only get you up two slots to number 28.
I mean, technically, that is trading a player for an upgrade because it's just delayed because it was the Morgan Moses pick. I'd be okay with that. And I think that'd probably be about the highest they would go. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, the last time they traded up with their first pick was Haloti Ngata. I mean, they traded up for Lamar, but they'd already
Joe Flacco.
Taken a pick.
They traded moved back
down and then they went back up.
Yeah.
But the first time the first move they made was up in the first, I believe, was not.
First move up in the first. I'll take your word for it. And that's only one pick, and with a sixth round pick that they threw in, which was far less than the value there.
Oh yeah.
Swindled his old buddy Bill Savage in that deal. It was a great one for Ozzie. I could see them giving up number 93. And if you address left tackle out of the deal, I'm not crazy about it, but I would be willing to give up 30 and 93 to get up to 23 or 24. 23 would be really good, because then you jump ahead of Dallas, who's in the market for a tackle. So Dallas has other needs too, but they'd be in the market for a tackle potentially. So you actually, it's a 2-for-1 deal. You move up and you beat out a team that's in a fixed position looking to get that. So when 23 is on the clock, you know you're getting your guy. The Ravens also may have those last three offensive tackles that we think are kind of right priced, differently priced. They may like one of them a lot more than the others. And it could be that that's a place. And I also think if you're at 21, if you're at 23, you might really have the choice between Leighton and Mims there and have it not be Guyton. I'm a kind of a Guyton fan, so I'd be okay with him being the guy. I think he fits the Ravens for some other reasons, but including the ramp up period. But I think the other teams are probably going to be on Mims and Latham very highly.
Right. So the calculation is hypothetically Latham enough, you know, so much better than, let's say, Guyton, that you give up the 93rd and Dane Brugler's top 100. I like the players in that range. And under 92 is DJ James, corner out of Auburn. 93 is Tez Walker, receiver out of Carolina.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Number four is Jonah Ellis, who's an edge out of Utah. Who's also, I'd be excited about any of those three guys. Not that this list is going to be hard and fast. This guy's probably go 15 picks earlier, 10 picks earlier maybe, but that's a calculation there. I'd rather hold on to that third personally.
Okay, and I'm with you on that. And 93 is a pick I would really like that. But the reason you might do it, and the reason it's on my list of things to talk about today, is because it's not the difference between Mims and Guyton, say if you're at 23 and have the chance to draft him, it's Mims or nothing.
Right.
So you also have that risk. And that's where I don't want to be in a reach for Sua Mataia or a compromise and take a Jordan Morgan. It's not the position I'd want to be in as the drafter.
Very fair. Very fair. Completely agree there. Morgan is probably on my don't draft list at this point.
The another thing that they've done in the past, and they certainly did with Kyle Bowler, they've done on other occasions, is trade a pick from a future draft. Trading a 2025 pick, I think, carries its own special burdens, the primary one being that you don't know how you're going to finish this year. And if Lamar gets hurt after four games and the Ravens end up winning six games the whole year, then you're really going to be pissed off at yourself if you traded away your number one pick and they could otherwise be picking number five overall or something.
Yeah. Imagine if they had traded away a future first the year before when Flacco tore his ACL and they went 5-11 and picked Stanley at number six. So that's a great point. And that's how Ozzie got that Travis Taylor pick, I think, or the Jamal Lewis pick.
Jamal Lewis.
Because they picked, who did they trade with?
They traded with Atlanta, who just had a great year to win the Super Bowl in 98, and they traded an early pick in the second round. They might have been 34, 35, somewhere in there. And Atlanta thought, oh, well, we'll just move back six spots or whatever because we're going to be in the NFC Championship game at a minimum. And then, of course, they had the fifth worst record in football.
Perfect example. Perfect example of the risk there. That demonstrates it exactly. Should we talk about Rashad? I'm sorry, go ahead, Ken.
I do want to get to Rashad just a second, but I thought one other thing is the lower the round you go, the less variation you have on what that pick value is. And in particular, the Ravens will have a fourth round pick that should be a compensatory pick next year. So often those picks are done on a floater basis where it says, we'll give you a fourth round pick, but we're not guaranteeing you about anywhere it is, which means you get the lowest pick the team has. If you can trade a four or a six next year as part of any package to move up, that's going to be better because you're going to be trading a pick right at the end of the round. So I like that better, and it's more, you're not gonna be trading away the first pick of the fourth round, even if the Ravens end up with the worst pick, worst record in football.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I like the idea of maybe trading away a sixth or a future sixth, where you can maybe move up a few spots in the third to get that one player at a position you really covet, or in the fourth, the top of the fourth. You know, there's always a lot of action on the when the bell rings, the first, you know, when the gates open. Mm-hmm. Round the next day, and everybody's been tweaking their boards, and then your whole all 10 guys you like go one through 10, they're all wiped out. Can you move up a little bit there and get the guy you really covet? I'd be very willing to do that if the right opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, those are I think really good options. Let's go to the hottest recent topic, which is a potential trade of Rashad Bateman. First of all, I'll just give my position. I'm not a big fan of trading Bateman at this point. I think you're trading low because mm-hmm. you know what he's done so far is not exciting anybody about his total value. Marquise Brown, you know, he had some production to lean on, so they traded him at a good time. I don't see this as a particularly good time to trade Bateman when you also have a dearth of wide receivers.
Absolutely, you're going to go down to one perimeter wide receiver. That'd be very risky. A lot of smoke though, Ken, a lot of smoke this week. There's a IG or something. I don't even use that, but Marlon Humphrey, they move his locker. You're hearing some of the people that are plugged in leave a couple breadcrumbs on the timeline, the Twitter timeline. So backdoor channels are saying there's a real possibility he did request a trade, and the Ravens have honored most of the trade requests, whether that be Chuck Clark or Marquise Brown, that they made wait a year, or Orlando Brown, Hayden Hurst, who they pulled the trigger immediately. But you're right. The point is, what can you get an equal talent back with the pick you get from Bateman? If you're going to get a third-round pick for Bateman, it doesn't really interest me too much. If you're going to package Bateman with a pick to move up, that doesn't interest me very much either, because you're creating another hole in the meantime, another two for one. So that's kind of where I am.
All right, so the players you named that the Ravens traded – so they traded a potential left tackle in Orlando Brown. It hasn't worked out great for him, but he's a left tackle, at least in his new life outside mm-hmm. of the Ravens. They traded Brown, of course, and that was Marquise Brown, I should say. The times they've done it, they've had players who were actual commodities they wanted, including Hayden Hurst. So even Hurst they got a second round pick from the Falcons, which is more than they should have gotten, frankly, for him at that point in his career. I don't see a counterparty that's going to be all that excited about Rashad Bateman. He's got a fifth year option, but that means he's got like 1.2 cheap years left, 1.3 cheap years by our, you know, earlier statement. Is that something that excites you?
No, not unless you're looking at some of the separation charts and you just say, hey, Lamar just doesn't click with X receivers, then maybe that's but I still agree. You're still probably selling low, or maybe not low, but lower than you want to be just because of how his career's played out so far. I don't know. It's tough. The other factor, I think, is maybe a little bit of a chemistry issue, personality, locker room issue. Let's say you do take a receiver in the first round, a Mitchell. How does Bateman show up for training camp at that point? I mean, he didn't even come to OTAs when he's trying to work on his chemistry with Lamar, and they're giving him an opportunity. So I don't know. There's a couple factors to the decision.
Yeah, I hope a player like Bateman would be trying to do things to improve his receiving skills still. And, you know, he's the best route runner on the Ravens right now. Not, you know, Zay gets by with tremendous suddenness, which is a level in itself that's very, very valuable. But Bateman gets by on being a great route runner. He's wiggling the defensive back and manipulating him, can run all the routes, can do, you know, very, very good versatile receiver in that case. He's the one true X on the Ravens right now. And I agree.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It will cause problems probably to have another player drafted that position. You know, one of the things to do, and your friend at Baltimore Beatdown, Kyle Barber, knows this very well, is he stays on top of Twitter accounts and he watches for profile changes that occur. Mm-hmm. And the year that the Ravens, well, it was when they drafted Trenton Simpson. I think Patrick Queen deleted the Ravens references
logo on his or whatever. Profile. Right.
Yeah.
This generation of athletes makes me laugh sometimes with this. Yes. Well, he removed his San Francisco 49ers from his Instagram. come on, guys. Even if you took a Leggett, even if you got a Leggett in the second round, is that eating into Bateman's snaps? I mean, Bateman obviously wants to maximize his career earnings and he wants to be showcased. And, you know, I don't know. It's a tough, you know, I didn't want to trade Hollywood. I didn't want to trade Orlando Brown either. You know, because they were needs at the time and they created a hole, but the Costa took the value. The question is, I don't think Bateman brings offers the same value.
Okay. But when you heard what the harvest was on the Brown trade, you couldn't have been, I'm sorry, the Marquise Brown trade, you could not have been upset with that.
Well, a second rounder for what? He was entering year four?
It was, I mean,
because they gave a third value.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's pretty high in the second round. I thought
I wasn't upset on the return, but I was upset that it left a hole in a position that they had neglected for a while, and they didn't really address it. And so I'll leave it there.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Now I want to talk about what I think is one of the most creative ideas of all. I want to make sure this gets credited properly. So, unfortunately, this guy did not want to come on either this show, which would have been great, or another show. But his name is John Buschelman, and he sent me this trade idea, which I'll just record directly. And it, by the way, he has all his work done, which is why just come on the show. You know, I'm trying to make you look good. Believe me, when we go through what your idea is, I won't ask you any really tough questions. I won't contradict you. You know, I might, you know, soft pedal something, but this guy has a very well-formed argument. So I want to give him the credit and talk about it. Okay. So his trade, and this is a lot to give up. He says trade pick number 30 and Isaiah Likely to the New York Jets for pick number 10. And the New York Jets, of course, are very closely tied to Brock Bowers, and Likely has two cheap years remaining on his contract. Brock Bowers would of course have four plus a potential 50-year option. So he's an even, you know, obviously there's more value at that, but then the Jets would be well compensated by still having the 30th pick in the draft in addition to Likely. You know, Joe Douglas is there, has been a Ravens guy. So the phone number is known when they see it on the other side. Let's put it that way. I think that's probably true of most of the GMs in the league from DaCosta's perspective. From a JJ points perspective, it would put the value of him at something like 680 points. Hollywood was traded he says for 760 points. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was the net take on Hollywood. That sounds a little high to me.
But 680 is what pick would 680 be, Ken?
Right around where the Ravens are. So it'd be like a second 30th round pick. Let me get to it quickly. Yeah, number 30 is worth 620. 680 is worth the 27th pick. So you're trading effectively 27 and 30 for number 10.
That's a pretty good return for Isaiah Likely. I think that's a very good return. You know, to really give some context, you have to kind of talk about the pluses and the minuses of 12 personnel. If you're a little short at offensive tackle, 12 personnel makes some sense. A lot of discussion about the viability of 12 personnel. Can a team support two tight ends simultaneously? Mm-hmm. I don't really think so. Monken couldn't do it at Georgia. Greg Roman couldn't do it with Tier. He couldn't even do it with San Fran when he had Delaney Walker and Vernon Davis. And Monken couldn't do it the Ravens last year. You know, look at the splits. When Andrews is out, Likely produces. When Andrews is playing, Likely doesn't. However, Dan Reeves, I'll give him some credit here. We looked at some EPA. And my thing is, the benefit of 12 personnel is the versatility that teams don't know if you're going to run and pass. Right. But when you're trailing, they know you're going to pass. So 12 personnel, a lot of that advantage goes away. However, EPA out of 12 personnel, even when trailing, even when in 80, I forget the exact terminology, W pass 80, if the likelihood of, or the general people pass 80% of the situation, so they know a pass is coming, they still would have had the best EPA out of 12. So I've softened my stance a little bit about being against 12, but I think there's some benefits still.
All right, so last year the Ravens had an unbelievable year throwing to the tight ends on all the rate statistics basis. So they had only 110 targets to tight ends the entire year, which is very low for the Ravens. But the quarterback rating throwing to them was like 140. 12 touchdowns, no interceptions is the headliner of the stats. But if you add up, all of them had good stats. By the way, even Charlie Kolar, who had very brief playing time, nine targets,
garbage time, targets, garbage time touchdown,
but the garbage head touchdown, which wasn't even from Lamar, was a positive. But anyway, 12 touchdowns, no interceptions. That has not been the trend in recent years for the Ravens when they've had more targets. And I talked on this show a fair amount about how marginal targets have less value. And it's kind of like, think of it like this. If you're trying to arrange Colton Cowser's playing time for the Orioles, you know he's going to hit right-handers a lot better than he's going to hit left-handers. And yet you can't afford to have platoon players everywhere. And so you say, boy, I'd be really upset if Colton Cowser only had 400 at-bats, because that means he's not playing every day. But the truth of the matter is his marginal at-bats against left-handers are not very good. And so it drags down his overall stats. Same thing applies to marginal targets. They tend to be the Andrews bailout targets or other places where you don't have as many wide receiving options. And so Andrews is a guy you're feeding the ball to, like Chamberlain in the post, as I often make that analogy, that you feed everything through him. And that's not a good position either, because defenses cheat on that. They're looking to bracket him. They're looking to get any tip or overthrow and make that into an interception or whatnot. And we've seen that in the past too. By restricting the number of targets, they actually got more value. Now, I think if they put those guys both on the field, they have to figure out how to get them more targets. But I also don't see that increasing back to the 190 level, even if they both play. I think we'd be, and it was about 190 was the year before. I think, they'd be lucky to get 145 to 150 targets with not too much of a drop off in rate. Obviously, that rate is not sustainable at the 12 touchdowns, no interception ratio. It's not sustainable. Even if they only had one tight end and he was the best tight end in recent memory, it wouldn't be sustainable. But they could, probably get a lower, a slightly lower 125 passer rating, say, or 120 with more targets. And that is, potentially something that's doable if they get Isaiah Likely into the offense. It's just it's not easy to get two tight ends options, period, because they run a lot of the similar depth of route. And 100%. So you need wide receivers to do that.
No, 100% agree there. It would be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for Monken, and some people say it's time for him to earn his money. The other thing, I'd also just circling back to the EPA part of it, I'm still not positive that's derived because there's two receiving tight ends. Not many teams have two receiving tight ends. Perhaps they're using a blocking tight end, which is improving the pass protection, which is really the driving force behind that efficiency there. So circling back to the question, I would make that trade. Although you're using a pick, you're doing another two for one. You're dealing from a strength in this place where you're not creating a hole. So I would sign off on that one.
Okay. All right. An interesting one. And if they did move up to number 10, the guy they could probably get is Fashanu, the second left tackle in the entire draft. I think, you know, they know who they're getting because they do it while the Jets are on the clock. And they try and maximize that value, but it's a very exciting proposition. So, anyway, great idea. Thank you, David, for suggesting that. I wish you'd come on the show yourself to talk it through, because we'd have had a lot of fun having you on, I'm sure. I think that's it in terms of trading. So we've got one major thing we haven't done, and that is kind of put a stake on the ground on who we think in order we would take for the Ravens. Among the guys who are between 21 and higher in the consensus mock. So we went to one specific mock produced, I believe, yesterday.
Arif Hassan, which is pretty much industry standard. It's apparently the best one.
Okay. So, and we can, we don't need to give them the website on that, but anyway, it's out there, and it's a interesting mock. So why don't we go through in reverse order of who you would take among the guys 21 and higher, to go for the draft. Who's your number six guy?
Okay. I actually have seven. So, because we added Mims, because he wasn't in the, anyway, I shouldn't have said that. Kingsley is my number seven. Kingsley would be my cutoff. If he is gone, then you're looking at a trade down.
You know, I'm on the board with that anyway, and I didn't have him in my top six, but I'll throw him on as my number seven. So we can both have seven in this case. He probably would even be my number six guy, honestly, if I was, because I really think the Ravens might need to reach at left tackle to make sure they don't get shut out in this draft. And reach could be done by reaching, it could be done by trading, it could be done in a couple different ways, but they're going to have to lose more value than they like to get their left tackle secured based on where they are. And they have the luxury, it's a year away, but anyway, put me down for Suamata Ia either at six or seven here. How about your number six guy?
Cooper DeJean. I think he has a high floor. He's not at the top of my list of my, you know, wish list, but I'd be happy with that pick. I think he'd, as I mentioned earlier, I think he can kind of be versatile. And the reason there is some redundancy with Kyle Hamilton, which is why he's not higher on the list, but I think still he brings some value to safety and to boundary cornerback, outside cornerback, that would be helpful. So I'd be happy with him at 30 as well.
All right. Well, fair enough. He's number five on my list. And I agree. I think we've talked at some length in the first show, I think more than in the second, about DeJean's limitations within the Ravens scheme and exactly how he gets on the field. I don't typically worry too much about how boundary cornerbacks get on the field in particular, because there's so many injuries there. Right. Ravens also have a pretty effective history of rotating. In fact, the year Marlon Humphrey was the Ravens team MVP, he started the season rotating at corner and worked into having the full-time job by the end of the year. But DeJean anyway is my number five guy. So I guess we'll move on and do my number six guy. And this is maybe going to surprise people, because I've been pretty much on the left tackle bandwagon the whole time, but Jackson Powers Johnson of Oregon would be the guy. I think he gives you tremendous versatility to figure out where your interior offensive line need to be filled. I think he's your backup center. If anything happens to Linderbaum, certainly will be an outstanding guard. I think he weighs 328 pounds. He doesn't have any of the issues with body type at the position, with the exception of length. He's not a particularly long guy, but he is good enough that at left guard, he should be fine. And for pulling responsibilities, he should be fine. So I really like him a lot. A lot of people have him at the very top of their interior offensive line list. Some people have Barton because they think he'll move, and that's legitimate as well. But JPJ to me is the number one interior offensive lineman this draft. If they get him at number 30, it's a consolation prize, but it's number six on my list.
Fair enough. I'm a little bit more rigid on positions, just my personality type. But Michael Crawford and Chris on the Deep Cover Pod did a really good job, you know, talking up JPJ. Really enjoyed that on one of the recent episodes. My number five is going to be Mr. Kool-Aid McKinstry. High floor guy again, coming from Alabama, you know, plug and play type. I don't think he has an all pro ceiling necessarily, also dealing with a foot injury, but the need at corner, I think that's a pretty good intersection of need and value, as you like to say, would be the Kool-Aid pick.
Right there with you. He's my number four guy. Only a slight value at 30. I don't think he's an extreme value. I agree on the medical flag. There's going to be people who have him black dotted, as I would call it, because that's what the Ravens do, or used to anyway, when they had the plaques. Kool-Aid is a guy I think that is a pretty safe pick at number 30. Not as safe as, you know, probably some offensive linemen, but I think a quality football player that's going to be a good NFL player. He's my number four, guys. We're down to your number four guy.
My number four is Adonai Mitchell, which I know you're not a huge fan of, but I think the upside is so appealing. And maybe he is a player that, like some of these tackles, can, with another year of development, then really, really hit the ground running as Bateman departs in next year, if he stays with us this next year. I like a lot of the factors of his game. He has the speed, he has the body control, he has good hands, and the athleticism, and again, the surplus value potential. If you compare Mitchell with Zay, both on rookie contracts for the next few years, Lamar could really do some damage while he's on this current contract.
All right. While I'm not the biggest Mitchell fan, I will say in terms of the total skill set involved, he certainly is a reasonable guy. On my list, I have Mitchell as the number eight guy with a second round pick. And I want to actually go back and see if there's anything else that you didn't pick up on that would be a reason why I really, really do not want him in that first round, other than he's a left tackle. His height has been inflated on some reports. I've seen him listed at least as high as 6'4", but he's really only 6'1" and change. Mm-hmm. So that was something. He had 9.8 yards per target, which is very good, but not in the, at the top of the, wide receiver class by any stretch. Nothing terrible about his 126.2 passer rating. Here's bad. He has nine career missed tackles forced. He's a guy at 6'1", 205, 6'1" and change, 205, who has only nine career missed tackles forced. So it's not a – you would figure him for more yak ability, but he had 3.2 yak per reception this last year. That's a bad number. And that is, by the way, that's the primary difference between his yards per target and some of the other really good receivers in this draft is an inability after the catch. So that was a problem. 13 and 30 in contested catches is probably a little bit bad for the NFL. Now, in terms of what was going on at Texas, he might have been the bailout guy who got a lot of those receptions that might have made it more difficult for him, or the guy that the other defenses were keying on. My final comment about Adonai Mitchell in the wide receiver notes is I'll read it to you directly. He's one of the few players I actually fear the Ravens might draft at 30 that I feel would be a bad pick. Not sure when he becomes a value, maybe middle of round two. So it's this combination of factors that are a little thing. By the way, not a great deep threat either, which is another reason. Doesn't necessarily have the whole route tree that he gives you. So he certainly is a physical specimen. What was his RAS score like? It was really high, right?
Fifth best of any wide receiver all time.
Okay. See, why? Why does a guy like that have so many problems actually playing football at this point? He's playing in a passing conference for a team that really wants to get him the football. I guess I really have a problem with that. So anyway, Mitchell is not one of the guys on my list. And, we had a good talk about this. I did the wide receiver show with James Ogden, and he also didn't want the Ravens to draft him at 30, which was kind of interesting to me, but,
polarizing guy, no doubt. Polarizing guy. He's not number one. He's my number four, but personally, I think the juice would be worth the squeeze on that one.
All right. I'm going to have a hard time believing we don't have the same top three here, but go ahead with your number three guy.
Nate Wiggins, cornerback at Clemson. Yes, sir. I think, long, lean, sticky man, coverage guy. A lot to like there. And I think he was the highest on the consensus, or maybe second highest.
Okay. Wiggins is my number one corner in this draft. And I had little problems with all the other guys. With Quinyon Mitchell, it's a matter of the quality of competition he's faced. I don't believe in it. And by the way, the ideal guy for seeing if Quinyon Mitchell is really going to be the guy, a lot of people have him number one now, by the way, in corners. Mm-hmm. Guy played at Toledo. The Ravens just got another guy who was Quinyon Mitchell in 2019, exactly 5 years ago, and that's Kadar Holman. The comps between these two guys are ridiculous. Both from Toledo, both 4.33 and 4.39 in terms of speeds. They both got it in terms of being able to pick it up and lay it down. And Kadar Holman, this will now be his 10th stint with his 8th team with the Ravens coming up this year. Wow. That should concern you because quality of competition obviously played into that. So I dropped Quinyon Mitchell to number 5 on my list of corners for that reason. And he's a guy I really don't want the Ravens to draft at 30. So if he's available, would it be the worst pick? It might not be. Thankfully, he's not on this consensus board, so we don't have to worry about it. But I kind of think he's a second round player to me. All right.
Yeah.
So anyway, Wiggins a top guy in the draft for me.
Yeah, he's right up there for me too. I'd be very, very excited. I know some folks are offense no matter what. I don't care if the first 29 picks are offense, take the 30th best offensive player. I'm not there. I agree with Jeff. Cornerback's a need for sure. Jeff Zeribek, cornerback's right up there with tackle. Number two is Guyton for me. None of these guys are perfect prospects. You're not going to get a perfect prospect at number 30, but I think there's a lot to work with there. There's a lot to like there. And considering the need, a very, very, very good pick. I actually had it as my number one until he revised the consensus.
Right. Okay. So to me, Guyton is right at the intersection of need and value at number 30. If the Ravens got him, it's going to be the biggest sigh of relief you'll hear from me. I'll be excited. I could be excited, I guess, more by another pick. It's just going to be a complete sigh of relief if Guyton is the guy. 6'8", 322. He's got plus athleticism across the board, 34 and an eighth inch arms. That's plenty long, so he'll be fine in that. He actually converted to offensive tackle in college 2 years in. And he spent 2 years at, in college, 2 years at TCU and then 2 years at OU. Mm-hmm. Very much still learning the position from a technique wise. Now, that's a positive from my perspective, right? That he could play better than he has at Oklahoma. And he does some other things that aren't right, but he's the best raw clay prospect in this draft, probably even better than Mims in my book, who we both have as the number one guy the Ravens should get.
We certainly do. I mean, there's some injury risk there and there's some inexperience there. I think it was Nate Tice that said he's not raw, he's just inexperienced, and there is a difference. Mm-hmm. There is a difference. It's you had the technique down. Maybe you're not as consistent as you could be, but some folks they don't have the technique at all. Mims is my number one. He was higher than 20 when I did this yesterday, so I didn't include him. And then we went back in pre-show production and he slipped down to 22. So yeah, that would be a guy that would check a whole lot of boxes for the Ravens from a variety of different levels.
Now, I will say I have one reservation about Mims is I think there's actually a pretty reasonable chance he has to stay at right tackle as a pro. And he's a guy who has gotten by at Georgia on monolithic size. He's absolutely enormous. When I say that, I'm usually talking about a player who, regarding a player relative to the size of other players in his day, Bryant McKinney was of similar size to Mims. And McKinney did it with weight, length, height, all that stuff. Mims is really going to depend. He doesn't have total left tackle feet, so he's going to have to depend on a lot of 12 to 6 blocking techniques where he uses his length to force that guy around the edge of the pocket. And even bendy edges should have a lot of trouble with a 340-pound guy who has real length, jamming him. The other thing he's going to have to very much depend on, 36 and an eighth inch arms. He needs to be the best puncher in the National Football League. He doesn't need to do that. He needs to be very effective using his length to get by playing left tackle. I think he can disrupt a lot of pass rush things there, but he would be the guy that I would be very excited to get. And even if I think the chance is only 50%, he ends up on the left side and he will get a trial. Some team, whoever drafts him, they're giving him a trial on the left side. I think that, you know, he still represents outstanding value and potentially has a significantly higher ceiling than a Guyton.
Absolutely. Very well said. I think the top three would really be dream scenarios, any of the top three, Mims, Guyton, or Wiggins. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and say our prayers.
Do you have any other players from maybe the top 20 that like you hope to draft? And I did this because I eliminated two guys off my list, but I have two guys that, boy, if they drop to 30, I wouldn't be upset getting either of these guys, and I'd be very, very excited about it, in fact. And I know you could pick like Roma Dunze, do that.
I'd probably be excited about Brian Thomas, the receiver from LSU. You know, he really fits the bill perfectly as an X. And I mean, we're talking outside of offensive tackles. I like Jared Verse a lot, personally, but I don't think he's getting there. But he'd probably be the other guy. I think he fits the way the Ravens play pretty well.
So Verse, probably the second or third edge rusher taken, I would think. I mean, I know Neyland has come up in the ratings recently, but probably the second or third. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I love Brian Thomas. I had one of the greatest deep ball years in the history of college football last year. The PFF is doing a great thing in their draft guide this year in dividing the route types. I don't know if you saw it, but they had number of post, corner, and go he ran. And the total of post, corner, and goes that he ran was 19. 13 of those were touchdowns. those weren't the number he ran. I'm sorry. Those are the ones he was targeted on. So yes, you can give some of the credit to Malik Nabers. Yes, some of the credit definitely goes to Daniels for getting the ball out there. But boy, that's an unbelievable thing. He's got to have some wiggle in his route to do that kind of thing and some real speed to make those sluggo and stop and go moves work. Most of those were go routes, by the way. 14 go routes in that group and 10 touchdowns. Just like these are insane numbers. They don't make any sense, but just absurd. The other guy, if he would somehow draft, and I'm back at left tackle now again, is J.C. Latham of Alabama. Yeah. If he drops, I'd be more happy probably with him than Guyton. Even though he's only played on the right tackle in college, I think Latham is a very easy projection to left tackle in the pros.
I definitely trust your judgment on offensive linemen, Ken. One of the best out there. Interestingly, the PFF guys don't love Thomas. They actually have Mitchell above Thomas, and I've heard some of their podcasts and stuff, and they think Thomas has bust potential. I don't necessarily see it, but just thought that was an interesting caveat to throw in there.
All right. Well, very good. Very good. Voss, always a pleasure doing any sort of show with you, but this draft season has been fun. Continuing on with the Friday Morning GM has been great this whole off season. Tell folks where they can reach you online or read your work.
Okay, I'm at Vasilis Beatdown on Twitter X. I am co-managing editor and author for Baltimore Beatdown blog. I also do another podcast called The Ravens Way. And you can also catch me on Ken's Friday Night Draft Sale, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a little bit. Thanks for setting me up there. It's a big thing we want to plug this week is Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We'll be on for every pick of the draft, we believe, certainly until the Ravens are done at a minimum. And our coverage is completely Ravens-centric, works off a co-host and panelist system. So Voss is the co-host for day two. We'll do a little bit of recap on day one, and then we'll jump right into the picks. And as the picks are occurring, we have an organic method, so we don't want anybody tipping picks. That's really important. We go in and we just listen to the picks and we all kind of react to them at the same time as they're announced. So we're working off the same feed. So we're all watching either the NFL Network or ESPN. And in the past, we've had some people watching Twitter or something and they'll tip picks and whatnot. We really don't want people doing that, but it is a very interactive opportunity. So you can ask your questions directly and jump right in. We'll have an opportunity for people to come on air live if they would like to ask and potentially interact with the question. So we'll send you a special link to do that if you have interest. But it's for a number of psychopaths who really appreciate the draft and really enjoy that, it's a very relaxing 12 to 15 to 17 hours to spend with some similar people. We do have rotating panelists for exactly that reason. We don't, you know, we don't want to give you the same opinions for all those hours, but we have a good number of people coming through, and it's always been a lot of fun. It's been one of the big things I look forward to during the year. I will say, I know I married the right woman because she says, I miss us having the draft time together. It's the most romantic weekend of the year that we could just sit on the couch for all these hours and play together.
Yeah. Oh, I have a couple comments. I'll tell you about that after the show.
All right. Very good. All right. For Vas Larikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. And we'll talk to you on Friday morning GM again with our next show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.